Welcome to the Mommy Beta Podcast. We are four new mommies beta testing parenthood, and we are all four online today. We have Alex, two Natalies, and a Jennifer. How are you ladies doing?
Hi, everybody.
Wow.
Good.
Hello. So, I missed you guys last week.
I know, we missed you. See, so you're back from travel. How was it?
It was amazing. We were in Whistler for 5 days. I had a spa day, went ziplining for my first time, re-slept like an angel, so that always helps. It was good.
Well, that's good. I saw pictures of her in a little life jacket. So you guys took her on a boat?
Oh, no, that was from Tahoe.
Oh, that was Tahoe. Okay. I guess I got him.
Too much traveling.
Right.
I know we are jet setters. We're little jet setter mommies. So this is a podcast where we talk about the things that we are blogging about on mommybeta.com. And today, Natalie decided to talk about this new gender test that's supposed to give you a reliable gender result up to at 7 weeks of pregnancy. Natalie, tell us how you found this story and what your initial reaction was.
Well, actually, I found it through my husband. He every once in a while will send me a link and say, oh, you know, maybe this is a good thing to blog about. So it's very sweet of him to keep us in mind all the time. So he sent me this link. And at first I was like, well, I'm not really sure if I'm going to blog about this because, you know, I didn't see what was really new about it until I read pretty down into the article that talked about this specific new test that's on the market. The article kind of led off with how sex selection is kind of a controversial, or gender determination is a controversial topic, because in some countries where there's a preference, say, for boys, it can be used to terminate pregnancies when they find out that it's not a boy. So that's how the article led off, and that's something that I was familiar with. So I was like, well, I'm not sure if this is something really new to talk about. But then, you know, it talks about this test, and the test is called, I think it's called Boy or Girl. Sorry, I don't have that up with me.
I think it's called Pink or Blue.
Or Pink or Blue, that's right. Yeah. Pink or Blue. So basically, it's a Bay Area company that is offering this kind of like, it sounds bad to say, but it's like an at-home blood test. But I'm sure you go somewhere to have the test, the blood actually drawn. So you have the blood drawn, you send it off to their lab, and, you know, depending on how fast you want it and how much you want to pay, they will send you back a result that supposedly has a 95% success rate, or, you know, 95% accuracy rate of whether you're having a boy or girl. And that can be done at 7 weeks. And I mean, that's a big difference, because most people find out whether they're having a boy or a girl at about 20 weeks when they have their second kind of genetic testing, ultrasound. So that's like almost a 3-month head start on knowing what you're having, if you're having a boy or a girl. So my question is, would you pay the about $300 to find out 3 months early the sex of your baby? What do you girls
Alex,
think?
Alex, I have mixed feelings. I think it would be really cool. And it's not so much the paying that bothers me. I know this is such a morbid thought to even say out loud. My fear would be finding out early at 7 weeks and then having a miscarriage, because most miscarriages, or many, happen before 3 months. And I think I would be attached to the idea of knowing, oh my gosh, that's a baby girl or a baby boy. But that's my own personal thought.
Oh, I hadn't even thought about that.
I mean, I think we attach some really, really good time limits on when we tell people, when we talk about it, when we get. It seems like, I don't know, I think that the way we do it traditionally, you know, 12 weeks before you start talking about it, and then 15 to 20 weeks before you know the sex of it, and all that. I think that's kind of a healthy way to you know, ease yourself into parenthood and start to tell other people. I think you're right. At 7 weeks, you're still in that danger zone. I think once you're out of 10 is even, you know, 10 weeks is even, my doctor had said, you know, the first 10 are the most dangerous. So, but I didn't find out sex at all. So I wouldn't have done this, just because I didn't, all the way throughout my pregnancy, I didn't know. What about you, Jennifer?
I'm too cheap, to be honest.
Can you get it on Craigslist?
Yeah. Maybe they'll have a Groupon.
Yeah, maybe if I see a Groupon or something like that. Yeah, but you know, I'll let the insurance company pay for my ultrasound that tells me the sex. I do want to know the sex of my baby, or I did find out with Elle. So, yeah, that's just, I wouldn't pay the $300, because eventually I would find out. Hopefully, you know, within the 20 weeks or whenever it is that you do.
And there are some women who go for the ultrasound and their little one just won't open their legs. And so they wouldn't be able to know. So this is a way, I guess, if you've got a really stubborn, modest baby.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
That's a really good point. Because I actually had to go back. This is Jennifer. I had to go back for a second ultrasound because the first time she wasn't really cooperating. She keeps her legs closed. She's a classy little Southern girl. And they had to wait for the gender at the very end because she wouldn't cooperate. And so, I got a call actually, I think a couple of days later, and they said, "Hey, you know, we want you to come back in because we didn't get a really clear shot," after they had already told me it was a girl. So
could you imagine? I feel bad for those people that they tell them it's a boy or a girl and then the baby's born and it's not what they told them.
I had a friend like that. Yeah, we had a family friend like that. They had all pink nursery, pink clothes, little girl clothes, and it was a boy.
So this could be like insurance policy against that too. If you were really, you know, if you had this strong premonition that it wasn't what they told you it was, I guess you could do this to kind of, you know, insure it. And, you know, $300 in a test would probably cost you less than redecorating your nursery.
That's true.
True. But back to your point, Natalie, what you said earlier about, you know, in some countries where they prefer a boy over a girl, that that just gets a little, what's the word? A little sketchy. I don't feel comfortable where countries would be able to do that and people would be able to take the life of somebody just because it's not the gender that they wanted.
Right. And that's what this company, I guess, won't ship tests to. I think it's China and India are two of the ones that were called out in the article.
Oh, that's good.
Yes, because they tend to have, you know, they have higher rates of the sex selection for boys that are more valuable.
That's not to say that, you know, if these couples who were bound to do this would have their ways of finding out gender selection. And they have laws. In fact, it's a law in India that you're not allowed to abort once you find out gender. But that's not to say that you wouldn't go and do other things to endanger your baby, to maybe end your pregnancy. You know, it's really awful, terrible thought. But
you know, it could happen here, too. I mean, you know, you know, some people really, you know, if you have three boys and you really want that girl and the fourth one ends up being a boy, you know, just because we're not in those countries that have those kind of leanings doesn't mean that it couldn't happen here. So maybe that's also, you know, another reason to be kind of cautious about this technology is because, you know, you're giving people a lot of power. And, you know, of course you have the right to do with your body what you want, but, you know, the moral area is a little gray there.
It's just heartbreaking.
Yeah.
I can't imagine as a mother to, you know, to say, oh, you know, I have three girls. Okay. Well, you know, I don't want another one. I can't imagine.
No.
No. Natalie, when you said, you know, we have the right to do what we want with our bodies, I totally agree. But it just made me think of this article I read where this mother is convicted or is being tried for murder. She is a meth addict, and she fed her 6-week-old baby while high on meth, and the baby died. And it just broke my heart, and my stomach was in knots after reading that.
Yeah, they did that story on Clayton's show on Fox and Friends this weekend, and they had a judge on who had said that she, you know, should be held liable because there were people who were telling her, hey, give that baby some formula if you're going to be doing meth. And she was like, no, it's fine. So she knew that she had the option to give the baby formula and breastfed anyway.
That's just wrong.
What a hard choice.
I have no sympathy for whatever happens to her.
Yeah. Terrible. Well,
addiction is a pretty awful thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. And you can't really expect someone to be thinking rationally when they're high on meth. But at the same time,
she shouldn't have the baby.
It should have been taken away from her.
I'm sure the hospital would have known if she had her in a hospital or him.
Yeah. Did they ask you guys when you went in to have your baby? They took me in a separate room and had Clayton stay in the waiting room. And I said, well, can't he come with me? And they said, well, no, we have to ask you some questions first. And I thought, okay. So he sat in the waiting room and they said, are you being abused at home? And I said, no. And then they said, are you on any kind of substance or have any STDs? And I said, no. And they said, okay, now you can bring him in. Did they do that to you guys? Like, maybe it's a lot of New York. Really?
No. I don't remember. It's all kind of foggy. I kind of have a vague recollection of them asking me questions privately, but I can't remember what they were.
Yeah, I guess maybe it's a law in New York or something, but since I went into preterm labor and then the labor stopped and I went home and then I came back when it was time to actually have the baby, they did that to me twice, where I had to ask these questions, answer these questions that, you know, you're not prone to answer in front of maybe someone who is abusing you.
Right.
So interesting. Oh. Nope. Not.
Well, I think it's a good thing to do, but yeah. No, didn't ask us.
Yeah. But I was kind of nervous about it. I was like, can he come? I don't want to go by myself. Like, no, we just have to ask you a few questions and then he can come. I'm like, don't go away. Don't go to Starbucks.
If you do, bring me back something.
Yeah. No, we did go to Starbucks right before Miles was born, and I got a tea to calm my nerves. And then as soon as we walked in, they're like, give me that. So mean. So Natalie, do you want to talk about your troublemaker post, or do you want to move on to tantrums? Up to you.
Why don't we move on, and then if we have time, we can come back.
Okay. So Jennifer, your little Southern lady can sometimes behave not so Southernly, I guess. So you posted about your early experience with temper tantrums. Tell us about that.
Well, you know, maybe it is Southern. Maybe it's the Southern girl in her coming out, throwing a fit for what she wants.
Is that a Southern trait?
It's a quality of mind that I can sometimes have. My parents used to call them stompers because I would always stomp around when I was not happy. It's a stomper, my dad would say. And it would make me so mad. But yeah, so I don't know, around 9 months, she started this thing where she would fly backwards so fast, arching her back, screaming if I would take something away, if I would get onto her for playing with a cord, or trying to put her in her high chair, which I thought was shocking because this girl loves to eat. And, you know, in her car seat, I totally get. But it would make it impossible to put her in there. So what I tried to do is, you know, holding her in her high chair, just carefully where she is, and eventually she's like, okay, fine, I'll sit down. Or when we're playing or something like that, I do try the distraction thing, which I think Natalie Moore, she mentioned, and Natalie Gafori, you mentioned, where she's crying about something and I make a funny face or play peekaboo or pretend to bite her leg or something like that, and she laughs and we move on. But I can sense the frustration not being able to tell me what she wants. In some instances where don't know why she's throwing the fit. So I was just looking for you guys to share your input and our readers on if they've come across this before. For those of you who do sign, do you see less of this? I don't know. What do you guys have to say?
No, I mean, I think one of my strongest opinions about this may be kind of controversial, but I think one of the worst things you can do is give in to them and show that that's the way that you get what you want, or that's the way that you express yourself. And I see that a lot of times in the grocery store, where a kid will throw himself on the floor, or, you know, throw something across the room, or even hit a parent or something, and the parent capitulates, and that gets under my skin so much.
Capitulate. You know.
Vocabulary word of the day.
That's our lexicon word of the day. I hope all your babies are using it by next week. And but I don't know. And I think, Natalie, you mentioned that in your post too, is, you know, you don't want to really let them know that this is an okay thing, but also you don't want to, you want to acknowledge that they're feeling frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is a question that you brought up, and it made me think of a question, let me put it that way. So I've been dealing with this in my own home, you know, not with anyone around. But I don't know what I would do if I was in the situation of a grocery store and my child's like screaming and, you know, have you guys done that, dealt with that?
I haven't had to yet. Every time, you know, this topic comes up on the babysitter emails or whatever, I read about it because I'm interested in kind of the different ways people handle it. And one of the things that I thought was best, in my opinion, was somebody was talking about their, you know, 2-year-old or something was having a fit in the grocery store. So they basically left their cart where it was, took the baby outside, let him go through his thing, because there's not much you can do when they're in the throes of a tantrum. You know, Nick will throw himself on the ground now, you know, the full-on tantrum. And there's nothing you can do except for let them go through it, because there's no reasoning with somebody when they're that out of it. So what they do is they take him out of the store, they take him to a safe place where they can just have their tantrum, whether, you know, they're laying on the sidewalk or they take him to a piece of grass. They just hold them and kind of, you know, make sure they're safe, let them get through the tantrum, take a couple deep breaths outside, and then go back to your shopping. I mean, you know, nobody's going to steal your groceries out of your cart. You're going to be fine.
And I felt like that was a good way to kind of curb the embarrassment that a parent often, I think, will feel when their kid is throwing the tantrum in the middle of the store. And it also gives the kid a chance to get out what they're feeling in kind of a safe environment. So,
yeah, I agree. When Reese goes out to eat with us a lot, and we were at this really nice restaurant. It was actually for her first birthday, but we were celebrating. And halfway through, had already been there for an hour, so she was probably bored. So she just melted, and she was tired. So Josh, you know, picked her up and just went outside just for a few minutes and calmed her down. And she was fine and came back in, and everything was A-okay. So I do think that sometimes just removing them from the situation so that they know that's not okay, that they can't, you know, scream in a restaurant, and just removing them from the situation is better, I think, for all parties, for the people in the restaurant and you.
Well, I'm curious, have any of you successfully signed with your child?
I have some signs.
Yeah, I do, and I'm still continuing. We do the basic ones like more, help, milk, what else? Bed, sleep. And she doesn't sign back. I think she's starting to sign all done. But we've been doing it for months, and I haven't seen a ton of traction. But I still continue to do it because I'm hoping it picks up a little bit. But even with help, when she, you know, she has this little walker that she walks, and she runs into the wall, and she goes, until I run over. And, you know, she just keeps banging into the wall because she doesn't know how to turn around. So I go, Reese, do you need help? And I do the sign, and she smiles. So I think she's getting it.
Miles can point to his mouth when he's hungry. He wants food.
That's cute.
And he can so do cute. All gone for when he's done eating. And then when he wants to read, he does like a flat palm against his face. Like he'll pick up a book and then put the flat palm against his mouth, like, read this to me.
How cute.
Cute. But, you know, that still doesn't prevent him from a physical display of frustration when he's frustrated with something else, and especially when he loves to go into the pantry where my pots and pans are and just bang them around. And our friend Lisa Wade, she got him for his birthday these little baby pots and pans, and he loves to play with them while I'm cooking, so he pretends he's cooking while I'm cooking. And then, you know, he'll want to take my pots and pans where he can reach out from below the stove. You know, I keep some pans underneath the stove when it's not hot, he can go over and open it up and pull some baking pan sheets out. And so when I take that away from him, because I don't want him banging it on my floor, he just throws himself on the floor, and man, he's upset about it. And so I have to realize, like, he wants this. He doesn't understand it's not his toy. It looks a lot like it. So I have to, you know, like, I think that the part of me that wants to get angry, like, don't you throw that fit with me, you don't know who you're dealing with, has to put myself in check and realize this is his only way of telling me. He can't say, hey, mommy, I really want that. You know, none of his three signs can tell me that.
Yeah. One thing that has helped with Reese is I talk her through everything. So, for example, before she's going to eat, okay, Reese, it's time to eat dinner. Mommy's going to make you dinner. And so I talk, and then I have her follow me now because she can just crawl super fast. I go, okay, come with me. We're going to eat. And so she follows me. So it's kind of her decision, like, oh, she's a big kid. She's, you know, crawling, and she'll crawl up to the chair. Or when we're at the park, she now cries when we leave the park. So I go, okay, Reese, 5 minutes. And I don't even know if it works, but she doesn't throw fits anymore. Or she doesn't cry when we leave. I go, okay, say bye to all the kids here. Say bye to the swings. And then I put her in her stroller. And she may fuss like for a second, and then that's it. So I think just talking them through it, I think they understand more than we give them credit for.
Yeah, you're probably right. I like how you said it's her decision, because one of the things that when Dominic first started to crawl, Natalie had said it's so interesting to watch him decide where to go and watch him be active.
And she's also starting to, I ask her to bring me stuff, and I'm like, okay, Reese, bring me the pink sweater. Can you bring me the spatula on the ground? And she'll be across the room, but she'll crawl to it and bring it to me. It's so cool. I'm like, I'm training her.
You really are.
Sean likes to play fetch with Dominic.
Right?
Yeah. So cute. Well, Alex, why don't you keep the floor while you're at it? Because you posted a guest post from our friend Susanna that really hit home to me, especially about being a mom and being a working girl. And sometimes I feel like it really is a choice, one or the other. And so tell us how this blog post came about and how it rings home with you.
Yeah. So Susanna and I were talking, and she is just doing a kick excuse my language, a kick-ass job, you know, being a mom and managing her and growing her business. She is a life coach, but what she specializes is in careers, so helping people with their careers and moving forward. And it amazes me how she does both. And I asked her, you know, how does she do it? Because I was struggling with doing both, you know, consulting and being a mom and, you know, doing a side project. And she was so honest. She said, you know, they're at odds with each other. You know, she says she loves her son, she loves her work, and she's, you know, and she's also pregnant again. So they're expecting a second. Yeah. And it's like, I look at her from afar. I'm like, wow, look at this rock star mom. Look at this rock star career woman. And so she wrote this amazing post talking about how, you know, she does have trouble with these two concepts. It's like, how can she love her son and her work? And, how can she be a great mom? I shouldn't say love her son. How can she be a great mom and still love her work? And she brought up a good point that, you know, society has built this image of the great mom as, I'm going to read something that she wrote. You know, this great mom is a full-time stay-at-home mom who cheerily gets up early in the morning to make a delicious and healthy breakfast for her kids. She's fully engaged with her children all day long, coming up with creative but fun lessons. All the while, she manages to keep a spotless home. She keeps up with friends, and when her husband comes home from work, it is to a gourmet meal and clean children for bed. And I read that, and I think, wow, that's the idea that I have in my head also, in addition to wanting to be a career woman. And so she talks about how ridiculous this idea is, and how she holds herself to this high standard, and it's nearly impossible. So she writes about, you know, what it is to be a great mom to her. And I think that's key. It's different for everybody. There isn't just one definition of great mom. And I'd love to hear what you guys think of being a great mom, because I do have something to share about my career. But I'd love to hear from you guys first.
I'll let one of the other girls take it.
Being a great mom.
Too many thoughts about this.
I can say that for me, reading that description, it's you know, I would imagine that to be a great mom. I'm not saying that person isn't a great mom. I've known plenty of people who stay at home and take care of their children. Coming from where my position before, where I was working my tail off and then transitioning to a mom and transitioning to the burbs, further away from my friends, not able to necessarily walk and see everyone. I also want to add something to that description. I feel like working is part of who I am, but it's also what makes me a great mom, because I want to be an inspiration to my child. And I don't know why, but for some reason, I feel like contributing to our home income and showing how I can bring about some, or actually make some sort of, I can work at home and actually produce something that I'm proud of and that hopefully my children are proud of, and my husband, he's always so encouraging, makes me feel better as a person, which I think makes me feel better as a mom, even though it makes me want to pull my hair out half the time.
Hear, hear.
Yeah, that's true. And I saw this piece on the Today Show yesterday, which I was thinking about blogging about, where all of these stay-at-home moms, it had this silly survey where moms had said that they wish that they had, you know, they would rather be thinner than have their kids be a little smarter. They would rather have like 10 minutes to themselves than have their kids, you know, like get better grades or something crazy like that. And I thought, well, it's not so much that these are bad moms or they hate being moms. And they had these snippets of women saying, like, after 5 years of being a stay-at-home mom, I feel like I'm a CEO of a business that never closes. And I thought, we're tired. It's not that we don't like it. It's not that we can't handle it or we wish that we had made different decisions. It's that we're working really hard and we're tired.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually found that survey very annoying, because coming from a PR line of work, I knew exactly what this company was doing and putting this together. And here we are talking about it. So,
well, we won't mention who did it just to spite them.
That was frustrating to me, because it was ridiculous. It starts off saying, oh, you know, moms, you know, they're jealous of the moms who don't wear their hair in ponytail, who are first in line at the carpool. It's like, yeah, we're all frustrated sometimes, but you know, I think we're all a little too busy right now to be really worried about that.
And when I was that woman who didn't have my hair in a ponytail all the time and was first in line in the carpool, I was jealous of the moms. So, you know, it's a situation where you have to look at where you've been and where you've come from and realize that it's not that, you know, we made choices to get here and I'm happy for these choices, but it is hard sometimes to not look back. And I don't want to, I think to myself a lot of times, especially when I'm covered in poo or, you know, feeling disgusting or haven't taken a shower, I think like, oh my gosh, at one point in my career, I had someone to do my hair and makeup every day. I had beautiful clothes. I had, you know, a completely different life than the one I had now. But I didn't have this amazing little smart, you know, beautiful boy in my life. And it was just a different choice. And if I keep looking back, I'm going to turn into the proverbial pillar of salt, if you know that.
You know, and I have to add something else here is that, you know, of all of this stuff, I am so thankful that I don't have to deal with the corporate BS that you have to deal with. Taking a shower, hopping on the bus, going to work for an hour, you know, sitting in meetings all day, not getting anything done. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I love being productive when I can be productive and I'm, you know, can get caught up in my own world too. But I can tell you, I'd love to take a client call in my PJs and get to go rush over and snuggle with my little girl. Mm-hmm. You know,
I definitely don't miss getting dressed for work.
I don't miss muni at all.
I hate to say never, but I'm going to say it. I'm going to say ever. I don't think I could ever go back to the corporate world after freelancing. Just the flexibility it gives me. Oh, I love it.
Agreed.
And you have to put that time in before you can get there. So we put our time in.
Yeah, we did. So I know we're going to move on, but I did want to share with you guys. So just thinking about Susanna's post and what, you know, what does a great mom mean to you got me thinking. And just a couple of weeks, I made a decision to quit the projects that I had been working on for the past 6 months. And I would say be a stay-home mom, but I'm also pursuing something with my husband. He had a great idea for a business. It's a website that we'll be sharing with our readers in the next month or so, but I'll be focusing on that. thanks, guys. But what I'm thinking about being a great mom is I do want to show and be an example for Reese that I can take risks. And I sat back and asked myself, what's most valuable to me? And 6 months ago, it was bringing an income. I cared about the money and plain and simple. I just wanted to bring in income. I wanted money because I was spending money. And I, similar to Jennifer, I just want to feel like I'm contributing in some way. And you know, I talked to my husband and I am contributing now in a different way, focusing on our daughter. And then also with this business idea, which will hopefully take off. So we'll see. So that's where I'm at now.
Congratulations. That's a big decision to make.
Yeah, and you had an awesome rock star job for Mozilla. So
yeah, it was great for 6 months. And who knows, I may continue to take on projects later on, but for right now, and I'm sure this will, you know, change a million times during our mommy beta career.
Right. Well, you work for us too. Right.
Yeah, I was going to add, we also have this blog and this podcast that
don't
we
forget
do
about
too,
your day job. But
day,
I think you've said it many times is that, you know, when you say no to certain jobs, you're really saying yes to other things. So it's not like, it's not like any of us are watching soap operas and, you know, just fooling around and during our free time. Like, we relish those nap times to do things. We want to, you know.
I miss being pregnant. I would sit on the couch and watch TV during lunch. It was awesome.
That is awesome.
The next pregnancy, though, you won't be able to.
No, yeah. I know.
Yeah. Well, I have been sneaking in a nap here and there. I will say that whenever Elle goes down.
Good for you.
Exhausted, I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to do this because when I have another child, there's not going to be a nap time.
No. Mm-mm. Well, okay. I guess that's all we've been writing about this week. Well, there's more, but that's all we're going to talk about. So hopefully you're visiting mommybeta.com and participating in the conversation and tell us about your... Actually, I was really interested in all the... we're giving away a nursing cover this week, and we've had some really fun entries to that for what's the wackiest place you've nursed in public before, used a nursing cover. What you guys aren't eligible, and I was hoping that you would ring in on this. Where's the wackiest place you guys have used a nursing cover before? Anyone?
Golden Gate Park.
Where's the wackiest place you haven't used a nursing cover?
Yeah, good point.
Yeah.
I did my first public nursing when Nick was about, I don't know, he's probably like 2 weeks old. We went to the mall and we were eating at Boudin's and I was super hungry and we had just gotten our food and he started to fuss and I was like, screw it. I'm not getting up to go feed him somewhere else. So I was so proud of myself because I managed to feed him and eat my bread bowl of chili at the same time.
That's wow. Awesome.
Input and output. Same.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think I've never pup nursed, to be honest. I'm not that comfortable about showing my boobies.
Well, nobody has to see your boobies.
I feel like there's, I mean, like, it's hard enough not showing my boobies with a nursing cover.
Yeah, well, that's true. But you get pretty good at it, actually, because, you know, we moved around so much in the first couple of months that it was out of necessity. And you get really good at sort of pinning it under your elbow while you're holding the baby so that no one can see anything. So, and I've done it in some pretty crazy outfits, too. Like, I wasn't going to, I don't know. I look back now and I'm like, what was I thinking?
I think you said
you gotta be stylish. I mean, you've seen the prices of these nursing.
Oh yeah, exactly.
I think you said, Natalie, that you nursed in every single Starbucks in New York.
I did. That's true. Yeah, it's the best, especially in the middle of winter. It's the only place where you can stop to feed your baby. But there's one comment on the blog about this woman who went to her father-in-law's like North Point ceremony where he was being honored at some military ceremony and she was nursing while she was singing the Star Spangled Banner into the nursing cover. I was like, you go, girl.
That's awesome.
I hope she had a patriotic nursing cover.
So awesome. Anyway, so that's one of the things that's available for giveaway this week. We also have some Baby Bjorn feeding products. Those will actually be given away at the end of this week. And then Alex has got some fun baby food to give away.
Yeah, Peter Rabbit's Organics.
Yeah, so watch out for that post and why we like this brand. So we're going to wrap up the podcast with little victories, our little things that are really spurring us on as new moms. Alex, you want to take it?
Oh, yeah. So Reese took her first steps this week.
Oh, my gosh. Oh,
that's great. Yeah. So exciting. She's very timid, but, you know, I think it was late last week, she would walk if you just held out one finger, and she was mostly doing it on herself. And this week, you can let go, and she'll take 2 to 3 steps. 3 is the max. And then she pauses and falls down just because I think she gets a little nervous, like, what the heck did I just do? Yeah. It's awesome. Oh,
get some video.
I will.
Video. Congratulations, Reese. That's a big accomplishment.
Aw, thanks.
That is.
That's a big little victory. Good girl. Well, you can always share your little victories or your stories or your challenges or anything you have to say about our podcast. You can go to our website, mommybeta.com, or email us, mb@mommybeta.com, or you can tweet us @mommybeta. We also have a Facebook page. We also have Google Plus accounts. We have personal. There's no shortage of ways to get a hold of us. So please do. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next week. We'll be Natalie-less next week. We'll just have one Natalie instead of two. But we will still be here. So we hope to see you. Thanks, gals.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
You and me, happy as can be, flying through the park on our bikes on a Sunday afternoon. You and me, rolling on the floor, practicing your somersaults, your cartwheels, your donkey kicks, and more. How did you grow so big overnight? How did you get so smart and bright? Yesterday you were asleep in my arms. Today you're growing off the charts. I'm so proud of you. You and me drawing pictures wild and free while the paint goes flying. Your big smile, it brightens up the room. And on my shoulder, your eyes on the pages ahead. How did you grow so big overnight? How did you get so smart and bright? Yesterday you were asleep in my arms. Today you're growing off the charts. I'm so proud.